everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Are You Kidding Me? I'm Naomi Schaefer Riley, a senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute.
And I am Ian Rowe, also a senior fellow at AEI.
And today we are joined by Herbie Newell. He is the president and executive director of Lifeline Children's Services, which is one of the largest adoption agencies in the United States, among many other things that they do. They are licensed in, I think, 18 states and also do international adoption. Welcome, Herbie. Thanks for joining us.
Naomi and Ian, thank you so much for having me. And thank you for all you guys do to advocate for children, for the well-being of children, and also for education in our country.
Thank you. So we wanted to start today the atmosphere around adoption since the Dobbs decision at the Supreme Court. There was a lot of discussion about adoption in the decision itself, but we are really more interested in kind of what is going on the ground in the world of adoption. There's certainly a lot of negative media coverage that we're seeing, but we want to find out about kind of the counseling that you're doing, the state of adoption, the women who come to you who may be in crisis, the families who are adopting. So let's start by just sort of asking, like, what do you think are the biggest changes you have seen since the Dobbs decision?
Yeah, you know, I think first of all, there is a cultural shift that's happened around adoption, I think, really in the United States. And one I would say has been positive and one I would say has been negative. I think the positive and the negative obviously are completely, inclusive of one another. The first, for us at least, is the pro-life community has really now accepted adoption as an option to an unplanned pregnancy. And I'm not saying they didn't before the Dobbs decision, but I think it's fair to say that adoption was almost seen as an other than option for a woman and wasn't really seen in the pro-life options that were viable for a woman that was experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. And so I would say from a pro-life standpoint, I know our organization, our ministry, and others like us have been really almost grafted now into the fold with pro-life ministries, and that's been a huge win from the Dobbs decision. You know, I have been pushing for over 20 years that adoption is a viable option. It's something that can help a woman. It's not the best option always, but it could be the best option for a woman and a child. And that's been a positive movement. And I think because of that, we've seen more referrals from crisis pregnancy centers. We've seen the pro-life community as a whole sending more women our way for counsel and to help them through an unwanted or unplanned pregnancy. I think the other side of the coin, however, though, is that now adoption has become ground zero, and the organizations that are providing those adoption services have become ground zero for those that want to see all that's wrong with pro-life America. And so certainly adoption has gotten a black eye in the media with certain things. Certainly we've seen a lot of folks talking about, you know, the process of adoption, as well as really kind of looping in adoption as something that is less than, and also that detracts from a woman as progressives would want, getting the quote unquote women's health care that they need. And so, you know, those are the two sides of the coin culturally that I've seen shift, and certainly can get into more of the numbers and logistics as well.
I think people would be surprised to hear that adoption was not viewed as something positive or empowering by the pro-life community. Can you just shed a little bit more why that was? And it sounds like you're saying it's shifting.
Yeah, I think, you know, and again, I've been in this work professionally myself for over 20 years. But even before that, my wife was in the PRC, the Pregnancy Resource Center movement, and working as a director there. That's even how we were introduced to the Ministry of Lifeline that I now serve. And what I would say is, for so long, I think pro-life America, and rightfully so, Ian, you know, for almost 50 years, the whole idea was, how do we overturn Roe v. Wade? How do we end abortion in America? And it became so short-sighted that we really, I think, lost the positive of our message? How can we help? What are the things we're doing to affirm women and children? How are we helping women and children once they do choose life? And so I think, you know, for a long time in the PRC, you know, with in-crisis pregnancies, they saw that abortion and adoption were almost equals, right? A woman ends up childless. Yes, she provides life through adoption, but it's so closely, you know, the outcomes are so closely aligned to abortion for where she's motherless, she doesn't have a child, she's not taking care of a child, that they thought they were too similar to really see adoption as a viable option to bring into their centers. I think post-Dobbs, there's a realization that, especially in states where there are abortion restrictions or even abortion's been abolished, they need to have more in their quiver, including adoption. Adoption needs to come into the fold there. You know, for all of us, right? I think a lot of times pro-life America has been short-sighted, though, of what happens after a mom does give birth. And so I know Naomi and I are sit on a panel and are very, you know, passionate about outcomes for our kids in foster care. But we have to realize with abortion restrictions, with abortion, you know, stopping in many states, there will be more kids in foster care. We need to think of the outcomes of these kids that are being born. Praise the Lord, for my sake, they're being born. But what is our response now that they're being born? And so, Ian, I would just say a lot of times pro-life America, again, so tunnel visioned on how do we end abortion? How do we make abortion irrelevant? How do we make it unnecessary, that we really sometimes put on the back burner those options that were life-giving and life-affirming?
So there have been a couple of studies now that have suggested that in states that restricted abortion, there has been an increase in foster care. I think it's very hard, frankly, just because there are so many factors that go into a state's foster care numbers, whether it's possible to kind of conduct any kind of controlled experiment based on this data. But I am curious kind of what you're seeing on the ground in states that have seen more abortion restrictions. Are you getting more people coming to you? And, you know, are you seeing this increase in foster care as well, just based on, you know, kind of what's going on the ground around you too?
Yeah. You know, first thing I would say is, you know, shortly thereafter, I'd say really for a year to 18 months post Dobbs, we were getting a lot more interest, a lot more calls. Women certainly were finding their way to us, especially in those states that we operate in that do have those restrictions or have those trigger laws on the books. You know, I think there was a lot of, and I know this is a word that gets thrown around, but there was a lot of misinformation from women about abortion. I mean, we were getting calls even from states where there weren't restrictions because the media fervor around Dobbs was that abortion had been ended in our country. And so we certainly saw a lot of women that were coming our way, that were calling. I would say it's definitely dissipated a bit. You know, we've not seen that rise continue to precipitously go up. It's kind of steadied. We pretty much are seeing, yes, more than we saw before Dobbs. But we don't see that continue to rise. It's really just kind of steadied. I think obviously a lot of the debate in America is starting to center around chemical abortion and access to chemical abortion. And a lot of those states that had those trigger laws or had those restrictions, that they're fighting now the chemical abortion ban. I think the second piece we have seen is we have seen, you know, and again, anecdotally, we have seen foster care numbers begin to rise. And Naomi, as you said, it's so hard to even track those. States have inaccurate numbers. To even get a snapshot of any given time is so difficult. But we do see those numbers continuing to inch up post Dobbs. Is that because of Dobbs? Is that because of another decision? That's hard to know. But certainly we've seen those. And there's a corollary between the end of Dobbs, states with trigger laws, and foster care increasing. And our message continues to be, we need more foster families to step up to care for these women. We need more intervention for women and that choose life to be able to thrive and survive. And what I tell, you know, our church partners and what I tell pro-life America so many times is one of the reasons we've got to look and take a hard look and a serious look at foster care is because if we're truly pro-life, then what we have to realize is every child in foster care had a mom that chose life. And so being pro-life, being those that want to see life come to fruition and also to flourish, we really need to take a hard look at our foster care system and engage in our foster care system as much as we can.
Yeah, I mean, seeing the numbers in foster care increase slightly, or somewhat inconclusively, but still increase since Dobbs, isn't the hope though that adoption is becomes more culturally normed so that children don't have to go into foster care in the first place? How do you think we arrive at that outcome?
Yeah, I think we've got to do first a lot more adoption education. I do think that most of America's view of what adoption is a bit antiquated. At the same time, what's interesting is I think most people in the United States know someone now that is adopted. So on one hand, people are talking about being adopted or their adoption a lot more than they have before. There's a lot less secrecy about a child entering into a home through adoption. And yet I still think that the cultural narrative is a little bit broken and antiquated on adoption. I think for women that are in an unplanned, unexpected, unwanted pregnancy, the cultural idea that they still have is of someone coming in and forcibly taking their child without their consent or without their involvement. And the truth of the matter is, over 90% of the adoptions that are done in the United States, especially when we talk about private, non-foster care, non-government related, the mom has complete control, meaning that she has a lot of different options before her. She can choose a family. She can choose the amount of contact. She can choose how she wants to be engaged and involved in her child's life going forward. I also think the families that are coming up for adoption are those that have been trained, where the training is much better than it was many years ago. Even when I started 20 years ago, we know how to help train and equip families so much better, not just to care for maybe some of the unique needs of their child, but also to talk about adoption in a positive, life-giving, life-affirming, child-affirming, birth mother-affirming way. And I think that's a beautiful thing. But most of America still believes that it's a closed system, that it's a bit antiquated, that there are birth mothers on the other side that have had their rights violated or terminated. And most of the adoption that's done in the United States, private infant adoption, is done with a mom's consent. It's done with her choices being considered and even being escalated. And it's really done in a very beautiful way. And so we need to change that narrative so that women know that this is a viable option, and certainly also to let women know that there's also help for her. So there's many great programs. At Lifeline, we have a program called Harbor Families. I have a good friend up in the North Midwest that has a program called Gathered for Good. And then, of course, there's Safe Families modalities throughout our country as well, which help women who need a chance for respite for their child, to try to keep their child out of foster care, to put their child into temporary placement until they can get a job or housing or get on their feet and be able to parent in an effective, safe way. And so I believe we got to look at all of that adoption, foster care replacements that help women and children stay together. We need to look at reunification to get kids back out of foster care into their biological families. And we've got to do all of this so that we're really trying to help for positive outcomes for both children, but also for families.
Yeah, what you're
Do you
suggesting is actually a child-centered approach.
Absolutely.
one of the criticisms that you've heard recently, there's a new book out by Gretchen Sisson and some other folks, is that even though there is this sort of move to sort of empower the birth mothers, that they have all these, that they have the choice, that they have the choice not only to place, but they have the choice of which family to place with, is that it's still somehow exploitative. And particularly in the context of women who may have had children who are already in foster care or who are involved in some way with child protective services. Do you see sort of any more coordination with kind of the public agency trying to push women into making the decision to place for adoption if they have children who have already been removed from their home? And, how do you guard against that kind of pressure that, women may feel, particularly if they're already, quote unquote, system involved?
Yeah. So anecdotally, I have not seen government systems that have pressed women towards adoption, especially not private adoption. Certainly, we have been involved with government agencies especially when women realize they're not going to be reunified with their children and they want to have some choice and some involvement in choosing a family. And so we've certainly been involved and engaged with government systems to try to help get a woman's rights back for her to make an adoption choice. That's typically what we see. We see the other side of it. Now, of course, towards Gretchen's book and some of her stories and some of the things that she found, does it exist? Of course, it exists. When a woman has any of her children in foster care, there's an immense amount of pressure. There's an immense amount of pain and hurt. One of the things that at Lifeline we do is help these women and dads as well get their kids out of foster care. And the number one thing that I would say every mom or dad who've lost their kids to foster care, especially multiple children, feel is shame, is abandonment, and is loneliness. And as a whole, we've worked now with thousands and thousands of parents who've lost their kids to foster care, and 100% shame, loneliness, are two of the number one feelings that we see from these parents. And so now when they have an additional child that's at threat of entering into a system, there's immense pressure upon them to make choices, good choices, to also be able to fight for that child, to be able to keep that child. One of the things, again, and this is anecdotally, but a lot of these women, especially that have multiple kids that are in foster care, one of their heartbeats is, I can be different. I can do this differently. I can create an outcome that's a lot different for this new child. And that pressure is real. And so I don't want to pour water on anything that has been said through these sources, that there isn't pressure on women to make an adoption plan or to make a plan to keep a child out of foster care. That's a real thing. I would just say anecdotally, in the 18 states we've worked with, we've actually been pushing the other way to say to government, hey, will you help restore rights to women? Will you help give a choice to women who realize that their rights are going to be terminated, who realize they're losing control over what happens to their children, and allowing to give them some level of choice and some level of future involvement in their child's life? And that's what I would advocate that private adoption does when it's done well, is it actually gives some influence, it gives some power, it gives some choice to a woman to help her really be able to have some long-term involvement. And again, what I would say is, we're full worthy if we think that we can place children in homes and never have involvement from a birth family. Unless a family is going to live underground and not have any social media or internet engagement, they have a profile that can easily be found by a woman. Of course, you've got even genetic testing that's happening now where women and even adopted children are finding their birth families. And so I think we've got to have a hard look at child welfare and how are we helping these women? Yes, maybe their rights need to be terminated, maybe because of choices they've made or outcomes that are not good for that child. But how do we help her stay involved in that system, not just for today, but for the future of both that child flourishing, both that child's identity, both that child's, just place in this world and knowing where they are. I think we need to be open and we need to be honest. And we need to have a system that's both child-centric, but also mom and parent-centric as well.
Yeah. I mean, do you think, like, two questions. Do you think that stigma or shame that you sense amongst women about putting their child in foster care or their child entering foster care drives or helps drives normalcy around single motherhood? Are those two things related? And then second, what about dads? What about fathers? What about men? How do we bring them into this mix?
Yeah, well, Ian, I think what you've just said is I think a cultural issue that we have in all of this, right? And it's that dads are continually separated from their children. And unfortunately, and here I am coming from someone who 30% of what our organization does is adoption. I would speak very candidly, and I would speak very honestly that we need to have a reform on dads being considered in private as well as government forms of adoption. That's a part of a child's story. And I think as we continue to separate men from their progeny and put them on one side and only put the children with the women, especially when it comes to, you know, outcomes in foster care, when it comes to different things that we're doing in private adoption, we're just driving a wedge that does encourage more single moms, that does encourage also a lack of responsibility for men. And I think we need to take a hard look. And if I was going to say, hey, where do we really need to reform private adoption? I don't think it's on a lot of the things that are being talked about. Where it needs to be talked about is, how do we involve men? How do we make sure that this is, that we're finding that birth father? And again, both not just for his involvement, but also for that child. And what we would always tell a family that's entering into adoption, especially domestic adoption or adoption from foster care, is everything you do today is a part of that child's story for tomorrow. And you don't want that child one day, you know, to go do 23andMe and find their birth father, and that birth father look them in the face and say, I had no idea you even existed. I had no idea that your mom was even pregnant. You know, I would have fill in the blank. We don't want to, now we can't be perfect, but we want to do everything we possibly can to be able to tell that child's future story so that they know that, number one, who they are, but number two, that they know that that family that brought them in, that adopted family, loved them, cared for them, and really had their best interest in mind, and that their best interest was caring for their parents. You know, and again, to your first question, I certainly also think the way that we are treating foster care, a lot of times within our foster care system, if mom and dad aren't married, then certainly, again, dad does not have as much involvement. Now, truly, I believe there's a natural order to God's creation of why, you know, women and children are inexplicably connected. Obviously, because moms have the gift of being able to bear children, and they have a nurture that they want to nurture their children. But 100%, we cannot leave dads out of this process. We've got to work with dads. We've got to help dads. We've got to help them stand up. And I know AEI has written a lot about this, extensively about this, especially in education and in outcomes for children. Children from two parent homes where there is a mom and a dad present have better outcomes. And it's just true. And we don't need adoption policy. We don't need foster care policy removing moms and dads from the lives of children.
All right. Well, those are all the questions that we have for you today, Herbie. We really appreciate your joining us and appreciate all the work that you're doing.
Yes.
So this has been another episode of Are You Kidding Me? You can get this podcast on the AEI podcast channel, wherever you get your podcasts. So with that, I'm Naomi Schaefer Riley.
And I'm Ian Rowe. Herbie, thank you so much. Very, very important work, for sure.
Thank you all for having me.